The next thing is, you see, when you pay attention, don't we say in ordinary speech, you can only think of one thing at a time? What do you mean by that? It raises two questions. Why can we only think of one thing at a time? And what is a thing? I love asking children, what do you mean by a thing? And they will say an object, which is another way of saying a thing. It doesn't help at all. One very smart child once said to me, a thing is a noun. And she's quite right. Because you can't think, and to think and to thing are the same process, without using words or notation of some kind. You can think in words, you can think in numbers, and you can think in simple images like squares, triangles, crosses, as when we think in terms of road signs that mean certain things. But thinking is the process of calculus. It is examining the world bit by bit, in series, one after another, one bit after another bit, as if we were looking at a dark room with the aid of a narrow-beamed spotlight, and tracing it out all over the room, and then in memory piecing together the bits, the series of bits over which this beam passed. And then we construct from that what sort of a room this is. A floodlight would, of course, be quite different. With a floodlight like this, we see the whole room in a glance, and we don't have to bit it. But we see, actually, an enormous amount of things of which we never pay attention to. For example, if someone were to say about a particular woman at this gathering, was Mrs. So-and-so there this morning? I say, yes, she was there. She sat opposite me. What was she wearing? Well, I tell you, I have no idea. I saw it, but I didn't notice it. Why didn't I notice it? Because I wasn't interested. I might have been interested in her face, but I wasn't interested in what she was wearing. Therefore, I had no notation for it because it wasn't noteworthy. Now, you see then, when we use notation, what we do is we pay attention to those features of the environment which we have been taught to regard as significant, important. And then we stick a label on them. And that label is a word, a symbol of some kind, or a number. And in this way, we fragment the world into bits called things or events. Things are represented by noun labels, and events are represented by verb labels. And so we come to imagine that the world really does consist of separate things and events. And it doesn't. And that's a very difficult idea for people to grasp. The reason is, you see, that we found this method of thinking about the world so useful for predicting what will happen, for remembering what did happen, and in order to predict what will happen, it is based on remembering what did happen, that it's run away with us. And as a species, we are seriously in danger of being completely fooled by our own thinking processes. So you see, what is happening to us then is the ability to think has gone to our heads. Now you see, when we think, as I pointed out, we equate some kind of symbol with what we call a separate event in the world. The symbols are separate from each other. But the things are not. This world is a great wiggly affair. Clouds are wiggly. Waters are wiggly. Plants are wiggly. Mountains are wiggly. People are wiggly. But people are always trying to straighten things out. Look, you see, we live in a rectangular boxes, all kinds. Look at the bookshelves, see? Everything's straightened out. So wherever you look around nature and you find things all being straightened out, you know people have been around. They're always trying to put things in boxes. Because boxes are classifiers, pigeonholes. Words are labels on boxes. But the real world is wiggly, wiggly, wiggly. Now, when you have a wiggly system like a cloud, how much wiggle is a wiggle? Well, you have to draw the line somewhere. And so people come to sorts of agreements about how much of a wiggle is a wiggle, that is to say, a thing. One wiggle. And always reduce any one wiggle into sub-wiggles. Or see it as a subordinate wiggle in a bigger wiggle. But there's no real fixed rule about it.